Morning. We have one case this morning, United States against Yameen. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Lieutenant Brian Korn, and I represent the appellant, Sergeant Rob Yameen. Chief Judge Efron, with your permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Granted.
Appellant was charged with forcible sodomy and holding a minor against his will. The government introduced evidence of computer file names that were suggestive of child pornography to demonstrate appellant's propensity to commit forcible sodomy and to establish appellant's motive to commit the lesser included offense of indecent acts with a child. The military judge erred in allowing this evidence for three reasons. First, a preponderance of the evidence did not establish that appellant possessed or attempted to possess child pornography. Second, the possession or attempted possession of child pornography is not a qualifying offense under Military Rule of Evidence 414. And third, the evidence should have been excluded under Military Rule of Evidence 403 as it was overly prejudicial. Regarding the first issue, the preponderance of the evidence did not show that appellant actually possessed or attempted to possess child pornography. The evidence at issue is merely file names with no content existing in those files.
Here the issue is the emphasis is on the nature of the test. In Leedy, for example, we said the file names might provide probable cause to search for child porn, but that's a different standard. So is your point that is the problem with the file names, or is the problem with the fact that file names don't get to the level of preponderance of the evidence?
They don't get to
the level. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And Leedy is absolutely one of the cases we relied upon to show that it does not get to the level of preponderance of evidence.
So it's the standard that's the hook here. It's not, you're not arguing that the file names might not be suggestive of child porn in a different context or something like that.
Certainly, Your Honor, we would concede that the file names are suggestive of child pornography. But the evidence at issue here is merely those names with no content existing in the files. The evidence was conflicting regarding whether the appellant owned the computer when the images were downloaded, as there was evidence that he bought it from another Marine in February of 2005. Furthermore, there was evidence that other Marines had access to appellant's computer and that their downloads would go to his user profile. And again, and most importantly, there was no content in these files whatsoever. Therefore, the evidence that appellant possessed or attempted to possess child pornography simply did not amount to a preponderance of the evidence. And going back to your question, Judge Baker, a determination that a preponderance of the evidence did not exist would be entirely consistent with this court's decision in United States versus Leedy. And in Leedy, this court found that graphic titles could lead to a conclusion of probable cause to search, which is a standard lower than preponderance of the evidence. And in that case, this court said that allowing those file names to demonstrate a probable cause was a departure from the usual course of requiring actual pictures to establish probable cause.
Counsel, just to clarify one of the points you had made, is your position that there was no evidence of downloads or disputed evidence of downloads?
Well, there was certainly evidence, Your Honor, that there had been downloads onto appellant's computer. And I don't think it was disputed that those files did at one point exist on that computer and that they had been deleted. There was disputed evidence regarding the downloads, however. There was disputed evidence of when those downloads took place.
I understand. Thank you.
And a few quotes from this court's decision in Leedy, I think, are extremely telling in this case. And in Leedy, this court said that courts have generally relied on photographic descriptions of pornography before finding probable cause to search for pornography. And secondly, this court said that an affidavit that demonstrates that a subject has viewed child pornography and describes that pornography is more likely to establish probable cause than one that does not. And therefore, because courts generally require actual images to establish a less burdensome standard than preponderance of the evidence, the file names in this case clearly did not satisfy a preponderance of the evidence standard.
What do you think the difference is between preponderance of the evidence and probable cause? If you were to describe what the delta is, how would you describe it?
Well, Your Honor, clearly a preponderance of the evidence requires it to be more likely than not that the acts occur probable cause requires something more than mere suspicion, but specifically something less than a preponderance of evidence.
And when we're making that determination at this point, do we give the benefit of the doubt to the person that prevailed on the motion below, or do we give the benefit of the doubt to your client? Do you understand what I'm saying? Do we view the facts in the light most favorable to the person that prevailed below, or in the light most favorable to the person that did not prevail below?
Your Honor, I guess I'm not sure. I think that certainly it's an abuse of discretion standard for the military judge's ruling is how this court reviews it. However, I think it's important to note that the military judge did not seem to know what standard he was applying at trial. He never cited the Huddleston preponderance of the evidence standard, and in fact, the military judge stated that the government had put on evidence that appellant had possessed or attempted to possess this child pornography. He never said that it was a preponderance of the evidence. He didn't say what standard he was applying, some evidence, preponderance, and never cited the seminal cases on the issue. So I do think for that reason, the military judge should receive a great deal less deference than he otherwise would had he cited the proper standards. Turning now to the second issue, in cases where an accused is charged with an offense of child molestation, Military Rule of Evidence 414 permits the government to introduce evidence of the accused commission of one or more offenses.
Assuming arguendo that it doesn't come in under 414, would you address the government's contention that it can nonetheless come in under 404?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Initially, it would fail under the 404 Reynolds test. But without even having to get to that test, Your Honor, in order for evidence to come in under Military Rule of Evidence 404, if it had been properly disallowed under Military Rule of Evidence 414, it would have required a limiting instruction. The instruction the judge gave in this case said that it could be used for any purpose whatsoever, including to demonstrate the appellant's or the accused's.
So what you're saying is that even if it could come under 404, you still got this 414 instruction hanging out here that says it can just come in.
Absolutely, Your Honor. So,
and of course, under 404, it can only come in for certain purposes.
Precisely, Your Honor. So that really moots the 404 issue altogether. It's certainly still our position that it fails under the Reynolds test under 404, but I think that that issue, as I said, is mooted based on the lack of any sort of limiting instruction.
Can child pornography come in under D5, putting aside this child pornography or these files? But are you arguing that child pornography generally cannot fit within 414, or are you arguing that whatever these facts are can't fit?
Yes, Your Honor. We are arguing that child pornography does not come in under 414. The fact that it was only file names is what...
What if child pornography depicted infliction of death, bodily injury, or physical pain on a child? I'm arguing child pornography writ large right now.
Understood, Your Honor. Whoever created that child pornography, those would certainly be acts that were admissible under 414, but the child pornography itself would not. Nothing in the case law or nothing in Military Rule of Evidence 414 demonstrates that possession or attempted possession of images is considered an offense of child molestation. First of all, Military Rule of Evidence 414 is based upon Federal Rule of Evidence 414. And Federal Rule of Evidence 414 is specific in including offenses under Title 110 of Section 18, which include 2252 Alpha offenses. When Military Rule of Evidence 414 was drafted, when the President promulgated the rule, that clause was specifically omitted. And clearly there had to be a reason for that. It would have been a simple and a normal thing for the President to include the clauses that were already included in the federal rule. And in this case, he did not do so. The rule, the military rule, defines an offense of child molestation to mean an offense punishable under the UCMJ or a crime under federal or state law that involved any sexual act or sexual conduct or any sexual explicit conduct with children prescribed by the UCMJ, federal or state law. Now, sexual act and sexual conduct, as defined in MRE 414, clearly do not appear to encompass possession offenses. So the question is whether the file names are evidence of appellant's commission of an offense that involves sexually explicit conduct with a child. And it's extremely noteworthy that in the military rule, in defining sexually explicit conduct, and in fact anywhere in the military rule of evidence 414, the term visual depiction, video, photograph, none of these terms are ever used. And these would have been simple explanatory terms to include if child pornography was intended to apply. Furthermore, Your Honors, in this case, there's no way to know if the files depicted an actual minor engaged in sexually explicit conduct. The military judge failed to make a critical threshold finding that the proffered evidence was evidence of a commission of an offense of child molestation, as there is no way to know if a child was even involved in any of these files. And without the content of the files, it is impossible to tell whether the files contain graphic images of actual persons under the age of 16 engaged in sexually explicit conduct.
I'm sorry. Finish your sentence.
I was simply going to sum up.
You started with three points that basically that under the preponderance of the evidence standard there wasn't enough evidence that these files contain child pornography. Two, the child pornography isn't a qualifying offense under 414. And three, that they're overly prejudicial. Which is your strongest argument?
The preponderance of the evidence, Your Honor.
And why is that a stronger argument than the argument that it's not a qualifying offense?
Well, simply, Your Honor, because this Court has already ruled in Leedy on what graphic titles amount to, as the whether or not the possession or attempted possession are qualifying offenses under 414 is an issue of first impression, so I don't have the precedent from this Court already supporting the argument as I do regarding the preponderance issue. And finally, turning to the third issue, Your Honor, even if this Court were to rule that possession or attempted possession of child pornography is a qualifying offense under 414, the evidence is still subject to a military rule of evidence 403 balancing test. And in this case, the limited probative value of the evidence of the file names is substantially outweighed by the danger of unfair prejudice to appellant. The government argued that file names that suggested appellant at some time and for some unknown duration may have had child pornography on his laptop computer meant that he had a propensity to forcibly sodomize or commit an indecent act with a minor. But looking at the 403 factors, it is clear that such a logical leap is unfairly prejudicial. Weighing particularly heavy in appellant's favor are the factors looking at strength of proof of the prior act and probative weight of the evidence. The strength of proof of the prior act was minimal, as the only evidence, as I've stated a number of times, was the suggestive file names. Furthermore, the relationship between the charged offenses and the other acts admitted through those files was extremely tenuous. There is no demonstrable relationship between JP, the victim in this case, and whoever or whatever might have been on the files that at one time existed or might have existed.
You're
on
really doubling back to the preponderance argument, are you not?
It certainly overlaps.
Not an additional aspect to the 403 argument?
It certainly overlaps with the 403 argument, Your Honor. Therefore,
let me ask you this in the abstract. I want to see what you say about the 403. And these are made-up facts for the purpose of trying to isolate 403 factors.
Yes, Your Honor.
If it was clear that the only person ever been on this computer was appellant, so that you don't have the issue of who was it, and the file name was forcible sodomy with 14-year-old boy in base library, would you have a 403 argument now? Or not, and what would it be worse for? No, I understand. I'm trying to isolate the real 403 issues here.
I think I would have a far less straight-faced argument there, Your Honor. We would still have the distraction to the fact finder over the access to the internet that went on in this case. There would still be the issue of temporal proximity and frequency of the acts. In this case, there was merely evidence that, and I know you're giving me a hypothetical, Your Honor, but if those facts apply to this case, there was merely evidence that the files existed for 24 to 48 hours on appellant's computer a year and a half earlier. So certainly there would still be 403 factors weighing against admissibility, but I don't think it would be as strong, Your Honor.
Counsel, the government devoted a substantial portion of its brief to the argument that if there was error in this case, that it was harmless. I believe you briefly addressed that in your brief. Not sure you addressed it in the reply brief, but how would you respond to the extensive argument that the government's made on harmlessness?
Yes, Your Honor. We would certainly disagree with the government's intention that there was overwhelming evidence against appellant. This case became a credibility contest between appellant and JP, and it's evident that the members believed neither appellant nor JP in their testimony entirely. They found a lesser included offense. They acquitted appellant of holding a minor against his will. So it's quite reasonable to believe that the factor that tipped the scales.
Could you explain how those findings reflect adversely on the credibility of the complainant in this case, as opposed to reflecting on the nature in which the government charged the case?
Well, Your Honor,
What aspect of the complainant's testimony is refuted by the findings in this case?
The victim testified that he told appellant to stop, that he did not want to have sex with him, and that appellant went ahead and forcibly sodomized him. So I think the victim's testimony would certainly support the forcible sodomy charge, and appellant was convicted only of consensual sodomy. And it's very reasonable to believe that these file names, Your Honor, these were venomous, potent file names. And these, the members in this trial, these are not military justice practitioners who see child pornography or who see file names of explicit child pornography on a regular basis. This was most likely the only time they'd seen anything like this. And upon seeing these file names, there is no doubt that they would have looked at appellant and said, you know, this is a bad person who would have file names like this on his computer, and that very likely could have tipped the scales against appellant in this case. An appellant respectfully requests that this court find that the evidence in question should not have been admitted, and set aside the findings of sentence.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Efron, may it please the court. The government would like to begin by addressing whether the military judge abused his discretion in determining that sufficient evidence was presented that a reasonable jury could conclude by a preponderance of the evidence that the uncharged acts occurred. In Miranda-Gonzalez, this court stated that the trial court neither weighs credibility nor makes a determination that the uncharged acts occurred. The determination for the trial judge is simply whether a reasonable jury could conclude that the uncharged acts occurred.
Now, you don't get to that if it doesn't qualify under 414, right?
Absolutely right.
Okay, so how does it qualify under 414?
As the two federal district courts who have looked at this case, or looked at this issue in the federal court, we don't have held, possession of child pornography is an offense of child molestation. Now, what the military rule does is it cites to, in D2, cites to sexually explicit conduct prescribed by federal law or the UCMJ. And as obviously this court's aware, possession of child pornography is not prohibited by the UCMJ. It's charged under the federal statute. So through D2, the drafters of the rule have incorporated federal law into what constitutes an offensive
act. How is possession sexually explicit conduct?
Well, because, Your Honor, as the federal courts have held, as the drafters of the rule we're getting to, it's a rule of inclusion. And sexually explicit conduct.
Drafters of what rule?
414, Your Honor.
MRE or FRE?
Well, the drafters are the same, Your Honor. In Wright, the drafters are the same.
Okay.
In Wright, Your Honor, this court stated that we look to the congressional floor debate for FRE 414 as evidence as to what the drafters of the rule intended.
Did that case address the differences in language between the two rules?
Absolutely right. I'm sorry.
Right? It addressed the differences in language and say we disregard the differences in language and look only at the floor debate?
No, Your Honor. I believe the quote is that the two rules are virtually the same. Now, and certainly
they're virtually the same, but there's one's explicitly, it's explicitly included in the federal rule. It's not in the military rule. There must be a reason for that.
Well, Your Honor, when you say explicitly included...
It's included by reference. It's incorporated by reference in the federal rule because it incorporates by reference this chapter, Title 18. Right. No such language appears in the military rule.
Right. And certainly, if, in addition to D2, Your Honor, the government asked this court to then consider D5, which is deriving sexual pleasure or gratification. And certainly the possession of child pornography goes to the...
Wait a minute. Would you read D5, please?
Certainly, sir. It's deriving sexual pleasure or gratification from the infliction of death, bodily injury, or physical pain on a child. And
Where is there in this record anything that says that any of this stuff, which we couldn't break up...
Take them in two pieces, though. First, okay, the first question is, can child pornography qualify? The second question is, does whatever these files indicate qualify? So first, jump into part two.
Yeah, go ahead.
Part one is, in the abstract, does child pornography, if you had child pornography that depicted whatever five means, why does it qualify or not qualify?
We would ask this court to consider the guidance of the federal district courts, which state that that possession of child pornography is an offense of child molestation. Now, yes, sir, there's certainly in the federal rule, they incorporate the D2 language in Title 18 of USC. But they specifically state of what an offense of child molestation is, and the possession of child pornography, that meets that burden.
But I'll take United States versus Seymour for an example. You know, it's just one example. In terms of the analysis that underlies that conclusion, we get child molestation includes both conduct prescribed and offenses involving child pornography, period. Period.
That's
I mean,
right.
That's it. It just says it does, but it doesn't say why it does or how it does.
Right, and certainly in that case, it is dicta. But I would ask this court to consider Stern or the court.
No, it's not dicta. I mean, they say it. I mean, well, it is dicta in that case, but that's not the point. The point is that there's no support for the proposition.
Well, there's no analysis for it there, Your Honor, but I think it's in Strum they more directly address the question of most of the case law up to that point had addressed child molestation as actual acts on a child as the accused in that case had committed a sexual act on a child. But they stated that there is support for the proposition that possession of child pornography under this FRA 414 D4, which defines child molestation as actual contact with the child, that's the same as possessing child pornography. And the reason is, again, when the drafters of this rule, what they stated was that child molestation is a separate class of offenses, and there are certain rules there that don't apply for other cases. And it's a rule of inclusion because, again, the general 404B analysis is not appropriate in these cases. That's the congressional intent here.
So, well, let me get this straight. I mean, I can certainly understand that making child pornography, actual, not virtual, which involves putting a child in front of a camera and doing something pornographic, certainly is an offense of child molestation. I have more trouble with the proposition that simply viewing it in the abstract without any contact with any child is itself an offense of child molestation.
Well, Your Honor, I would ask this court to consider that the victim in a possession of child pornography case is obviously the children whose acts were depicted. And certainly they are victimized by the demand for this conduct. Not simply that the acts that occur, but it's the demand that every time these pictures are distributed or received or possessed, they are re-victimized. So for the actual person who this rule is trying to protect, the victims of child molestation, to them it's really, again, re-victimized by the possession or distribution of child pornography, not simply the act in and of itself.
Counsel, if the evidence that was, excuse me, were you finished just speaking?
Well, I have one more question. Assuming arguendo that it doesn't fit under 414, would you address the appellant's contention under 404? The government says it can still come in under 404. The appellant makes the point that you've got, in this case, you've got this 414 instruction hanging out here that says this can go in for any reason. You know, it can only go in under 404 for certain limited reasons. And where does that leave us?
Well, Your Honor, first, the government's position is that it is relevant under 404B because the central issue in this case was whether appellant was heterosexual or homosexual. And certainly, possession of child pornography that's of a homosexual nature would be direct evidence that he is, in fact, interested in boys or men.
What direct evidence is there of that, other than just these titles that we really don't know what they depicted?
Your Honor, we would ask this court to consider the expert's testimony that each individual file requires a separate affirmative act. In other words, he would have to click on the file icon and hit download for each individual file, that's a separate affirmative act requiring him to actually read what that file name is. And someone who is not interested in
what specific homosexual activity did those files depict?
I mean, certainly, Your Honor, we would...
That's the direct evidence, isn't it?
Well, as part of it, yes, Your Honor, the file names from 1 through 4, take 1, for example, certainly depicts or suggests that we're talking about adolescent boys engaging in sex acts. So that would be evidence of his intent or motive in this case that he would want to do the same act with the victim here.
You wouldn't disagree that 413 and 414 are sort of a variation on the ordinary rule that propensity evidence can't be considered precisely because it is so probative and prejudicial.
Absolutely.
So in terms of when something clearly falls inside the rule, obviously we should interpret it and apply it expansively. But in terms of deciding what falls within inside the rule, do you think that the same rule applies?
Well, no, Your Honor. And again, it's because of the explicit, the congressional debate in Wright. We looked at, I believe it was Representative Malamar's testimony, in determining what this rule was designed to get and what it was designed to do. So I don't believe that the same standards out there for 404B, I believe that Congress was explicit in stating they're not satisfied with the standards for 404B. So that's why 413 and 414 are created, because these class of offenses require separate rules and separate considerations.
Well, to follow up on Judge Ryan, because it's an exception, don't we have to cut very, very square corners and construe it very strictly?
For 404B, Your Honor?
No, for 414.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. Again, we ask this Court to consider the explicit congressional guidance, which is that 413 and 414 are rules of inclusion.
No. It's an exception to the general rule, as Judge Ryan pointed out, that this kind of evidence doesn't come in because of its enormous power and its prejudicial effect. Here we have an exception. But what I'm saying is, don't we therefore have to construe any exception to that rule strictly?
Well,
like you construe any criminal statute strictly against the government.
Certainly, Your Honor, that you construe rules strictly. However, in this case, 413 and 414 are basically, they specifically say that you don't construe them strictly, as you're saying. They're taking the old common law rule and they're getting rid of it for these class of offenses. So the government would respectfully disagree with your position there.
The government's position then is that Congress just wanted to chop the rule and let anything in. And we don't have to look at the limiting language?
No, absolutely not, Ron. That's why we have 403, and that's why we have these other protections in there, such as Huddleston and the standard of we don't just allow any evidence in, we require
that. Well, what I'm really getting at is the fact that, you know, it's explicitly included in the FRE and it's not in the MRE, and how does that cut?
Well, Your Honor, by explicitly including the FRE, they cite to 18 U.S.C., and certainly
right
here they cite to sexually explicit conduct prohibited by federal law. And again, Your Honor, possession of child pornography, we believe is sexually explicit conduct because of the fact that it re-victimizes the victim in each individual case. If I may address, Your Honor, where we're left if the evidence is out on the 413 and then is admitted on the 404B, certainly that's an issue for this court to consider in determining whether or not there's prejudice in this case. But again, the evidence is certainly relevant under 404B to prove his intent here, or to prove his motive to commit these acts. Because, again, a central point of contention at trial was the appellant's sexual interest. And these files demonstrate this interested in males and not just males.
I'm sorry to do this to you, but can we go back to 414 again?
Of course, Your Honor.
Because I want to make sure I understand your argument. It's the accused's commission of one of these offenses, right? So it's not child pornography in the abstract. It's the accused's possession of the child pornography. And so with respect to 1, 2, and 3, for example, are you saying or you are not saying that those aren't at issue because 1, 3, and 4 address contact? And even if the guy has, the person has child porn, he doesn't in fact have contact with the child. Is that correct?
Right, Your Honor.
So you're not arguing that would qualify in the case of possession of child porn?
No.
Okay. So the debate, as far as you're concerned, is about 2 and 5.
Correct? Yes,
okay. And in 2, your argument is that it's broad because it's any, and child porn involves sexually explicit conduct with children. So the with is what's on the child porn, not with the appellant.
Right.
And I'm just making sure I understand your argument, and then appellant will have the opportunity to guide us back to the accurate reading, in his view. And then with 5, the reason it qualifies in your view is because child porn inherently involves deriving sexual pleasure or gratification by that person viewing it.
Correct.
And then your issue is, does the porn in question actually depict the things that 5 says it depicts?
Certainly.
So you would agree that 5 is not a child porn writ large exception. It is a, in your, it would have to be in any event a child porn, provided it does death, bodily injury, or physical pain.
I mean, the government's position, Your Honor, would be that certainly all child pornography results in physical pain upon children by its nature. But certainly in this case,
because in the abstract, you could have naked children in baths, unknown to them, they're being distributed all over the world as child porn. So you'd, I mean, just in the abstract, for the purpose of having this discussion.
Certainly.
Supreme Court just decided a case the other day in which the court decided that the term physical violence is different from mere touching. How do you get physical pain to mean any child pornography? Every child, every 16-year-old child who participates in having in a sexual act in which a picture is taken is suffering physical pain, as those words are commonly understood?
Well, no, certainly not. There's conceivable issues of child pornography that this court has brought up that might not meet physical pain, but we would ask this court to consider the filings in this case, which clearly depict pedophiles, and they reference preteen boys and rape and other things that clearly, by their nature, denote physical pain.
With respect to subsection 2 and the sexually explicit conduct, if the evidence introduced on this particular issue in this case had been presented to a federal district court with respect to an offense, what offense could the individual have been convicted of? What's the offense if the only evidence consisted of these file names?
Attempted possession of child pornography.
Attempted possession of child pornography.
Your Honor.
And can a person be convicted in federal court of attempted possession of child pornography without some indication that the pornography involves actual children?
Well, no, not in federal court, Your Honor. However, we would, in this case, refer to the MPEG that was actually recovered, which depicted actual people, like they weren't cartoon characters or something to that effect. And again, in this case, we know what appellant's intent was when he downloaded the files in this case.
Just talking about this particular information, could this information be used in a federal court to obtain a conviction for attempted child pornography?
We believe it could, yes.
Even though there's no indication here of evidence of actual children?
Respectfully, Your Honor, we would ask this court to consider the movie file, which the expert testified that although he couldn't definitively state what was in that file, they were real people.
But I thought that, unless I'm misremembering, I thought that he said he couldn't definitively say whether they were adults or children, just that one was larger and one was smaller. And they couldn't definitively say whether they were engaged in sex, though it appeared that it could be.
Right, Your Honor. But again, that would be evidence of the attempted possession of child porn.
Did he address actual virtual versus virtual in his testimony?
He addressed what had to do with cartoon characters and the Government Accountability Office study, Your Honor, about the rates of pictures of if you search for child pornography terms, what the percentage of times cartoon characters would come back or something to that effect. Your Honor, but again, we would ask this.
Could that be used to convict someone in a federal district court?
The evidence of that study, Your Honor?
Yeah. If you've got that and that evidence in this case, would that provide a sufficient basis? That's my question.
I think it's evidence of it, Your Honor. I don't think in and of itself it would be a sufficient basis.
So if the evidence that was introduced in this case would not provide a sufficient basis to obtain a conviction in federal district court, and if the rule in the military is to be read the same way as the rule in civilian life, how is the evidence in this case fitting under Section 2?
Again, Your Honor, because we don't actually, the rule does not require a conviction. It merely requires the judge to determine that a reasonable jury could find by preponderance of the evidence that the uncharged acts occur. There is no requirement that.
Well, let's take the lowest standard, Jackson against Virginia. If you had a conviction in federal district court based on the evidence in this case, would it survive a challenge under Jackson against Virginia under the some evidence standard?
Under intent, absolutely, Your Honor.
Can you list for me precisely what facts in the record support preponderance of the evidence in this case?
Certainly, Your Honor.
Just to go to one of the appellant's main argument is that it doesn't meet that standard. So can you respond to that argument?
The first, Your Honor, would be the filings themselves, clearly. Second would be the fact that each individual file required an affirmative act, which is demonstrative of appellant's intent. Third, the metadata for all of these files indicated that they were child pornography.
And when you say metadata, you mean the rest of the name that was. What do you mean by metadata?
There's internal. It's an internal naming.
Description, right? Okay.
Right, Your Honor. They themselves were reflective of child pornography.
What about the timing, and what about the ownership of the computer, and what about others' alleged access to the computer?
We would ask this court first to consider Miranda-Gonzalez, where credibility is not the determination by the trial judge.
No, I'm not asking about that. I'm asking you what evidence is there with tying those three things or excluding those three things in this case?
Certainly not. The computer was registered to Rob Yumin. The evidence, if we look at the AOL, which became a big issue in the trial, was he was paying the $23.90, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You may answer the question.
Thank you, Your Honor. He was paying $23.90 in October and November, which is around the time when this was downloaded. He claimed that this was simply for an email service and nothing else. And yet, when you look at his bank statements before that, he was only paying, I believe it was $2 or $3 a month. So clearly that evidence, in addition to the evidence that the only user folder on the computer was Robbie Bean, would be evidence that it was actually his computer, Your Honor.
And if you'd like to do so, you may briefly conclude.
Respectfully,
Judge Ryan, does
that
answer your question?
The appellant's allegation or argument that someone else might have accessed it, or however you say that?
No, it would refute his argument that he didn't own the computer at the time the files were downloaded, Your Honor. Respectfully, even if this court would have determined that error occurred, that error is harmless, because JP was able to note with pinpoint accuracy where the appellant kept KY jelly inside of a drawer in his room, inside of a clear plastic Walmart bag. He would not be able to possess that information if the acts did not occur as he described them. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal? That concludes the argument then. We appreciate the presentation by both counsel today. The case is now submitted, and the court will stand in recess pending further order of the court.